This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. And certainly, this broadcast is important for all people, and never more so than by what has happened over the last few hours in Great Britain, where a plot to blow up about 10 international airliners going to the United States was uncovered. 24 arrests were made. A horrendous plot that it would have taken, as the official said, an unimaginable number of lives. This kind of terrorism has to stop. And ladies and gentlemen, we have to understand very, very clearly that the terrorism we faced in the United States, such as 9/11, and the potential terrible loss of life and destruction that we faced just over the last few days in Britain, did not occur in a vacuum. It is a direct result of a war, a so-called clash of civilizations, which has been initiated by the Zionists for Israeli and other Zionist objectives in the world. Israel is at the root of this problem. I've said it many times, and I'll say it one more time. The President of the United States got up and said that the hijackers of 9/11 attacked America because they hated our freedom. The truth is, they don't give one whit about whether we're free or unfree. The reason they're concerned about the United States of America is because our foreign policy has been in the back pocket of Israel for so long. And America has acted as Israel's proxy in a war, for instance, against Iraq, which has caused the death of at least 100,000 Muslims. No one can deny that. It's thrown the country into civil war. We have been the proxy supplying Israel with weapons of mass destruction for years. We literally said to the world we were opposed to their Lebanese invasion in the early 80s, and yet behind the scenes we supported Israel continuously with billions of dollars of funds and military equipment. We told the Israelis we did not want them to make settlements on West Bank land, on Palestinian land. Israel went ahead and did it anyway, and we didn't stop sending them money. We haven't stopped sending them planes. Condi Rice was just over there recently in Lebanon, and she was all over the world saying that she didn't want a ceasefire. Now, that was before, ladies and gentlemen, the deaths of 36 Lebanese children, and hundreds now of Lebanese children have been murdered by Israel in this conflict. And literally thousands have been wounded in this conflict, disfigured children. I'm talking about children who for the rest of their lives will bear terrible scars, disfigurement, crippling, blinding, just incredible. And America has been a party to this. In fact, America has said, go for it, Israel, just keep it up. And we've supplied them with the guns and many of the tanks and many of the planes and much of the munitions and the bombs, which are blowing apart Lebanese women and children. Israel killed 20,000 civilians in its original invasion, and boy, they're on their way this time. And they're destroying a whole country, a country, by the way, which was an ally to the United States of America. When Iraq had problems with Kuwait, and they entered a war with Kuwait, which is like many of these states over there have problems with each other, suddenly Iraq became an enemy, even though our diplomats, and this is a fact, our ambassador to Iraq basically told Iraq that we wouldn't be involved in a conflict between them and Kuwait. We ended up, of course, going to war against Iraq in the Gulf War. We went to war against Iraq not because of Kuwait. We went to war against Iraq in that original Gulf War simply because Israel was concerned of the fact that Iraq was amassing a major military power, that they completely supported the Palestinians, that they were extremely anti-Israel in their posturing and in their positions, and Israel wanted always and wants always to be the big boy on the block. The big boy on the block. And they're willing to kill and maim and do anything they have to do to maintain that absolute superiority. And the sad thing is that they used the United States of America to accomplish that, to do that. They used our money, our military equipment, and the lives and the well-being of our soldiers and sailors and all of our military personnel in that theater of war. And many tens of thousands of Americans today are suffering a Gulf War syndrome in that war which was for Israel. Now, why did Iraq become our enemy? Iraq, again, was our ally. Anyone in the media or elsewhere can provide pictures of Donald Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld, the same Donald Rumsfeld, which is, you know, the draconian figure of the Iraq War. They can show pictures of Donald Rumsfeld having tea and shaking the hand of Saddam Hussein, our ally, an ally we literally supplied with weapons of mass destruction. In fact, I will go further than that. We literally, the United States of America, supplied Iraq with the means to make biological weapons. Now, I know that may be shocking to many Americans, because most Americans know only what CNN tells them. They only know what they read in the New York Times or the Washington Post or their daily pro-Zionist newspaper. But in sworn testimony before the Congress of the United States, you can contact Robert Byrd's office about this, the United States Senator from West Virginia. Contact his office and ask him about this. In sworn testimony, we learned that the United States of America sent to Iraq anthrax. That's right, live anthrax spores from the Center of Disease Control in Atlanta. We sent Iraq anthrax. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States of America was an ally of Iraq when they attacked the Kurds. And when it said that they used chemical weapons and gas against the Kurds, that is made perhaps a debatable issue. But ladies and gentlemen, we were their ally then. And we didn't say, you bet you can't use this gas. We didn't say you're going to be an enemy. No, we kept on sending them weapons even after the reports came in. Only when Israel got concerned about Iraq becoming more powerful militarily, when they started supporting the Palestinians and the Palestinian fight to regain their land, their homes, and really their dignity after being occupied and brutalized for decades by Israel. Tens of thousands of Palestinians were tortured in the prisons of Israel. Palestinian life, both in the West Bank and Gaza, was made into a hell by Israel. Anyway, we supported Saddam Hussein, but Saddam Hussein emerged from the Iran war with a tremendous arsenal, which we, by the way, gave to Iraq. We gave them that arsenal. We gave them biological weapons. But as soon as Israel began to see that Iraq was a threat to Israel, or that is simply a nation that could support the Arab cause and support the anti-Zionist cause, immediately the propaganda spigots began to open up against Iraq. I'll give you one really good example of it, which is a classical example, and it also shows how easy it is for the media to manipulate ideas and attitudes of the American people or any people. The media has that power. If you have a certain element in control of media, you can manipulate things any way you want to. It has been said, repeated literally in 1,000 different articles and 1,000 different commentaries and 1,000 different news reports and ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox News Network, and the rest of it, that Saddam Hussein was rewarding Palestinian suicide bombers by giving their families $25,000 and sometimes more when one of these Palestinians died in that kind of event. Now, what are the facts of the matter? The facts of the matter are this. No Palestinian family, father or mother, really wants their son or their daughter to blow themselves up, to commit suicide and be a suicide bomber, obviously. And if parents knew this, they would stop their child, absolutely, and would be totally opposed to that. And of course, sometimes kids grow up and they're on their own and parents can't control them, even if they decide to do something radical. But Israel had a policy of if a suicide bomber struck, that his family, his mother, his father, his sisters, brothers, his family's home would be blown up, dynamited. Dynamited, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, there's no system of justice that would punish someone's family for what an individual might do or not do. And yet again, these parents certainly wouldn't want their son or daughter to commit such an act. So in response to this incredible injustice, by the way, something which was objected to and absolutely condemned by most of the European nations, in response to that, you know, Saddam Hussein had some oil money, and he said, look, he said, any Palestinian who dies and the family suffers from Israel destroying their home and family, we're going to give them a grant. It might not be enough to build their whole home back or put their lives back together, but we're going to help them. And that's what it was response to. It wasn't a reward for suicide bombers. It was a way to try to mitigate the injustice of Israel in this case. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a son or daughter that does something wrong, could you imagine the government coming in and dynamiting your home or punishing you? Or you know, it's obvious that this is an incredible act of illegality and brutality that Israel has done. And that was the reaction of it by Saddam Hussein. This kind of thing continues on every day. Again, another good example of how they use the propaganda is what happened in Iran with the speech of the Iranian president. And you've heard literally, most people have heard this probably 30 or 40 times themselves. It's been repeated in thousands of articles and commentaries and newspaper pieces and so forth, that he said that he was going to wipe Israel off of the map. In actual fact, ladies and gentlemen, he never said anything like that at all. It's all phony Zionist translations, phony translations, lying translations, deceptive translations of what he said. He did say he believed that God's judgment would fall upon Israel and that the Israeli nation would suffer from that judgment. He did not say anything about wiping Israel off the map. He didn't say that he or Iran was going to wipe Israel off the map. He didn't say that they were going to create this or do this. He just said that Israel was going to suffer and that the Israeli nation would suffer from the wrath of God. That's what he said. But the translations, but you hear this all the time, right off the map. It's an absolutely false translation. But this is repeated enough times, and now you think this is what the Iranian president has said. So, ladies and gentlemen, the whole issue of what's going on, 9/11, this so-called war on terror. That's another good example. You know, war on terror. What is war if it's not terror? And what is the purpose of war if it's not to inflict terror on the enemy? War on terror, it's one of those, you know, one of those nonsensical terms, one of those oxymorons, war on terror. It reminds me of the movie V for Vendetta. I saw it the other day, kind of interesting movie, and it kind of shows you how the government reacts. For instance, one of the people opposed to this authoritarian, this absolutely repressive government, the commentator on the air, and he made a very speech, a big speech about how we needed freedom of speech in the country and freedom of thought and freedom of press, and the commentator referred to the speech as a hate speech. You know, you can do anything you want to with words, and they're controlling our words. and this incredible war, so-called war on terrorism, where did this begin? It began, if you really want the roots of this entire Islamic Western conflict, of course there always has been antagonism between Islam and Christianity, and they've gone to war against each other quite a few times historically. You have two great religions with a will to power and a will toward expressing their opinion and spreading their ideology, and both sides have been guilty of extreme jingoism in this. I mean, you had the Christian Crusades, which weren't exactly the sweetest actions, where you had massacres, you had whole villages and cities massacred, and you had plenty of brutality. And I've also heard Muslims say that the Muslims weren't as brutal as the Christians in their occupation, and that's of course totally untrue. There are horrible brutalities against Christians and against Europeans in the Muslim expansion. I'll give an example on the Balkans. The Sultan in Turkey, in the Ottoman Empire, they would kidnap thousands of Christian children. And, I mean, literally kidnap them from their parents and raise them as warriors for Islam. So there's been antagonism on both sides. But ladies and gentlemen, that has lessened in the last century. Since the European victories, for instance, at Vienna against the Ottoman Empire and the retreat of the Ottoman Empire and the First World War, they've really lessened. And the truth is, with good, healthy Western power in Europe, Islam was never any real threat, wasn't and is not a threat to us now if we're dedicated. The only threat we really have is from immigration. And that would be a threat for any people, ladies and gentlemen, any people. But this entire process did not start as some sort of a terrorist thing against goodness, this evil thing against goodness. It started in reaction to a terrible terrorist endeavor. And that endeavor, of course, was the creation of the State of Israel, a nation that was founded on terror in all aspects of its structure. First of all, the Israeli radicals, the Irgun and the Stern Gang and the rest, they terrorized the British. They terrorized. They blew up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. They literally assassinated Count Bernadette. They assassinated UN people, British Mandate people. They would kidnap British soldiers and string them up in piano wire and torture them and put notes in their body. This is from the Irgun and the Stern Gang. So they terrorized the British. In fact, they terrorized the British so much that the British finally just got sick of it and left. The Stern Gang, the Jewish terrorists, were the first people who started the so-called letter bomb. That was one of their tactics, the letter bomb, which was sent against many British mandate individuals who were in Palestine. They started what's called the car bomb. That's right. The car bombs, the first car bombs, were used by the Israelis. And of course, they terrorized the entire Palestinian population and drove out most of the Palestinian population off of their own land, out of their own homes, from their own businesses, their own farms, which they lived there for literally thousands of years and their families had. And they did it. How did they do it? Through terror, ladies and gentlemen. Through things like the massacre at Deir Yassin. In my book, Jewish Supremacism, I talk about that massacre, and I talk about how that great Nobel Peace Prize winner, the terrorist, how he wrote that they publicized the massacre at Deir Yassin, in fact, to terrorize the Palestinians. And you're seeing a very similar thing to it right now. The Israeli government and the Israeli IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, that is the biggest misnomer I've ever heard. They are now shelling just about they're just destroying everything in southern Lebanon. That way, there's no cover, there's no place for the Hezbollah to hide. But the Hezbollah itself, again, let's go to the roots. The Hezbollah itself was created because of the Israeli invasion. It didn't even exist when the Israeli invasion took place. It was created because of the terrible atrocities, the bombing of Beirut. Israel in Sabra and Shatila, under the auspices of Ariel Sharon, they killed 12, they literally oversaw the murder of 1,200 Palestinian men, women, and children. I mean, we could go on and on about this, ladies and gentlemen. And since that time, Israel, as I talk about again and again and again, they have seized control of the American government in so many ways. They dominate Congress. They dominate funding. I quoted one of my programs, a Washington Post article, where they literally said in this article that, you know, that over 50% of the funding of the Democratic Party for president, 60% I think it was coming from Jewish sources. They're the biggest contributors. And they were showing all the powerful Jewish influence in the Bush administration and the Republican side as well. The most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. is AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. The most powerful. And that's just one of the many Jewish committees, just one. And they have such a network of rich Zionist Jews, and they have a lot of economic power in America, that they literally, if they want to go against a politician, they can get dozens and dozens of people from all over the United States, in fact, all over the world if they need to come in and give the maximum amount politically for a candidate or to a candidate they don't like to his opponent so they can defeat them. Plus, they can call in their chips. They have so much influence in media. It's not hard. If you're a media person, you have a newspaper. You have a local, like in my city, we have one paper in New Orleans, the Times-Picayune. It's owned by the Newhouse family. We joke about it and call it the Jewhouse family down in New Orleans. It's a New York family owning the only daily newspaper in the city of New Orleans, a major American city. It's the only paper, and it's controlled by Zionists who literally dictate, you know, what we're going to read in our papers every day about what's happening in Lebanon and what's happening in the Middle East. We have Israel right now, recently, paying an American sailor, employing an American sailor, to spy on the United States. Espionage against us. Yeah, this is supposed to be our ally. So, ladies and gentlemen, anyone who tries to attack the United States of America, I am for applying the maximum penalty of the law against those individuals, whether that be the death penalty or whether that be life imprisonment or whatever the law is. I'm for the maximum against these individuals. And obviously, we have to do everything necessary to stop terrorism. But if we don't deal with the underlying causes of terrorism against America and Americans, if we don't deal with that, we will continue to suffer from terrorism, such as the plot that originated from England against commercial airliners bound for the United States of America. And now we have in the United States of America literally millions, tens of millions, in fact, in terms of passengers, because most people fly even more than once a year, hundreds of millions of times, people will not even be able to carry carry-on bags anymore across the United States, or carry any liquid, or carry any face cream, or shaving cream, or toothpaste even on an airplane. And of course, that costs billions of man hours in terms of this inconvenience. A lot of people just get on the plane and get off, especially if it's just a short trip or 2-day trip or whatever. They can't do that anymore. We have the danger of dying at any time from terrorism anywhere in the world. And again, the United States government cannot protect Americans everywhere in the world all at once. It's impossible. We might control our own governments and some of our own security measures. We sure can't control what's happening, say, in Sri Lanka. We can't control what's happening maybe in Malaysia. We can't control what's happening even in China. We can't control what's happening in all the Middle Eastern countries. We can't control what's happening in all the Eastern European countries. And Americans will be at risk. We are at risk right now because of this policy. And thank God this plot was thwarted. Thank God the people that were doing this plot were brought to heel and were arrested. But I guarantee you there'll be a lot more of these going on. The only way that we're going to be safe and secure, that both in our personal lives and our families' lives and in our own economic stability, because you can imagine the economic devastation that these kind of things have on the American economy and the world economy. The only way that we're going to be able to survive these things is by trying to address and focusing on the underlying problems, the underlying causes. And I think we can, if we're sensible, come up with a solution. I think the West and Europe can easily require Israel to give back the stolen land on the West Bank and stop these draconian actions against the people of Gaza. And internationally, we can guarantee Israel security. The United States has already done that. So, you know, that would be the biggest single action. And then if Israel did that, any sort of actions against Israel in the future, obviously the entire world would be opposed to and would act on. At the same time, I think if we do that, if we give the Arab people what they really desire, what they want, the control over their own lands again, their own freedom, I think at the same time we also in Europe must say that, you know, we want repatriation for those that have come to Europe. We want them, obviously, to live in their own lands and not in Europe, because we recognize the only real threat to Europe from the Islamic problem is a problem of immigration. It's not really a problem of external forces. In fact, the only way that these hijackers, look at all these so-called hijack plots and terrorist plots, they've been almost entirely borne by people who are not Europeans and not Americans. Immigration has led, open immigration has led to the situation where our countries are vulnerable to this terrorism. And if we had no massive immigration, obviously, it'd be very easy to screen or to profile the hijackers and offer a tremendous amount of protection to the American people and the European people and the other people of European civilization. And ironically, and one last comment I have for this program, ironically, the same people who have led us to this clash of civilizations, to this incredible brutality in the Middle East, and a returning brutality to the United States and to Europe, the same people who've done this, the same Zionist Jewish supremacists who've done this, are the same ones who've opened our gates to immigration and opened the gates of American immigration from Mexico, opened the gates of Europe to Turkey and the rest of the Middle East. And I respect the people of Turkey. I respect the people of the Middle East. I respect the people of Mexico. But every people, every race, every society has the right to maintain itself and protect itself and preserve itself. Islamic people would not want massive numbers of Christian Europeans coming down to their countries, becoming a majority, taking over their lands, changing their culture, changing their mode of dress, their values, their music, everything else. And obviously Europeans don't want that in our countries of non-Christians and non-Europeans, and Americans don't want it either. Every people has a right to preserve its way of life, and immigration is conquest. And immigration right now of non-Europeans is a conquest of Europe. It's something that the outside Islamic invasions, the military invasions, could never accomplish. It's happening right now. And in many cities, you literally have a situation where half the kids in school, public schools, the younger generation coming up, are in fact non-Europeans. You're seeing this all over the European world. You're seeing it all over the North American continent. And that's all we have, ladies and gentlemen. Europe is a very tiny part of the geography of the world. And even North America is a small part of the overall geography of the world. And if we lose our particular homelands, then we lose our way of life. We need to not be focused on a war of so-called war on terror overseas, a war that's being orchestrated by the Jewish supremacists. We need to be focused on the conflict for the heart and soul of our own nations, of our own countries, of our own values, of our own way of life, of our own precious traditions, our precious freedoms, our precious character, both physical, mental, genetic, cultural, spiritual, religious, the preferences of our people. We have to literally stand up and defend our way of life. And by focusing on this external threat, just as they used to focus on the threat of the Soviets, which was the big thing in the 1950s while America was being eaten up within, you know, we have got to start thinking about what's happening inside our own nations And we've got to come to an agreement with these people around the world that, yes, we will not interfere with the affairs in your country, and you'll damn well not interfere with our country. We're not going to get involved in your blood feuds. We're not certainly going to let our foreign policy be controlled by alien nations such as Israel against the interests of our own respective societies. We're going to make sure that our press is truly free and not controlled by this foreign force. We're going to make sure our people get the truth. We can't have a democracy if people can't get the truth. And we will have a world, hopefully, of peace between all nations and all religions and cultures, but also a society where we'll be ready to resist and ready to defend ourselves if necessary from the external threat. But we will at home be so strong and so vital, and we will truly have a society that reflects the values of our forefathers and the things that we find beautiful and important to ourselves and our children. Listen, thanks so much for being with me. I really enjoyed being with you. I'm going to continue on with the book, Jewish Supremacism, Chapter 8. I'm going to discuss, as I have been discussing, the roots of anti-Semitism. This is the second section on that. It's called Crime and Treachery. And it's very interesting because we're going to go into the role of organized crime, first off and foremost. And most people in Europe and America, because of the Jewish Hollywood movies, associates organized crime with Italians. In fact, you hear Italian music and you think, you know, the mafia, you think organized crime. And yet, the facts are clear and easily provable that the greatest purveyors of organized crime in America, Europe, and Russia have been, in fact, not Italians, but Jews. In fact, the biggest gangster in the United States of America in the last 100 years was not even Al Capone. The biggest, most powerful gangster in the United States of America was Meyer Lansky. But his name is not quite as well known as Al Capone and some of those other guys. This is a very interesting chapter, and I think it'll help give you an understanding of why and what is anti-Semitism. And again, anti-Semitism is something defined by the radical Jewish Zionists and radical supremacists themselves. It's kind of a defense mechanism. So on Monday, we'll continue with those chapters. Until then, I appreciate all of your listenership. I appreciate your efforts for our freedom, for our heritage. And that's my bywords, you know, for our heritage and for our freedom. That's where it's all wrapped up. Those two things are the things that are necessary for us to have life and really a decent life for ourselves and our children. And that's all we ask. We're not trying to conquer the world like Zionists or the globalists. We're not trying to dictate to other countries. We simply want to live as our fathers lived, by the values that make our hearts warm and by the ideals of beauty and freedom that our people have developed over the centuries. Please help me in this fight. If you can support us financially, please do so. Order my book, Jewish Supremacism. Subscribe to the Duke Report. And let's continue to work as hard as we can to wake up people of European descent and really all the people of the world to the threat of Jewish supremacism. Thanks so much, and I look forward to being with you on Monday. This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.